Welcome to this Ocean Life podcast. I'm your host, Josh Peterson. Today's episode is sponsored by our friends at Mile 22, makers of surf and paddleboard accessories, including their world-famous Monster Straps, designed in California by folks who surf and paddle every day. Check them out on the web at mile22.com. Now, in today's episode, number 16, we speak with Jennifer Lee, an amazing woman of the water who has accomplished something super incredible. She's crossed the 32-mile Molokai Channel solo three different times on three different watercraft in 1 year. She did it on SUP, on OC1, Ocean Canoe, and a surf ski. Now, as a strong SUP and six-person outrigger canoe competitor, Jen shares her stories of developing skill on the OC1 and surf ski, working through the challenges of racing across the channel three times within just a few short months, and provides a great and humble approach, perspective to pushing her own limits of endurance in the water. Jen's got great energy and a really cool perspective. It'll be really inspiring to anybody who pushes themselves in the ocean. So, thanks for being here with us, and let's get into the ocean life of Jennifer Lee. Jen, thank you so much for your time today, and welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you so much. I'm really happy to be here. This is awesome.
Yeah, I appreciate you sitting out in your car, because you're just mentioning you have an indoor chicken that likes to talk over you when you're on the phone. So thanks for being so flexible today.
No worries.
If we have time,
no worries at all.
If we have time, I want to hear how the chicken came into your life and became indoors. But we got some other bigger things. So you've done something super duper amazing, and I'm going to kind of just touch on it, start it off, and then you got a lot of pretty amazing things to share with us today. And what you did was you were the first person, and tell me if I get any of this wrong, but the first person to cross the Molokai Channel, which for folks listening may not know, that's from Island of Molokai to Oahu, three different times on three different craft, SUP, OC1, and surf ski, in the same year. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
So first question, and then I'm going to let you tell us about all of this, is what drove you to have the passion and desire to do this really pretty amazing feat?
It was really funny. It was I didn't know other people had tried it. I sort of, out of frustration, because a lot of my Molokai crossings hadn't gone well. It was kind of my, pardon the expression, but white whale. Like, I never felt like I had shown my potential in a channel crossing or paddled to my potential. And so last year, when I was in the six-man crossing with my canoe team, we had a really experienced steersman who's crossed basically all but twice since they started allowing women to do it.
Wow.
In the six man. And we'd be out there and she'd be like, no, no, not this one, this one. And I was like blown away, because I was thinking, wow, I've been doing this all wrong for 7 years straight.
Yeah.
And so it popped into my head to use other watercraft to teach myself how to get better out there, basically, or learn from the ocean. And the faster craft, you can get into bumps more easily and kind of make more mistakes per se and still manage to get on those bumps. There's not as much friction at the bottom of the craft. And so I sort of was, you know, brainstorming last fall about how to get better. And as you get older, downwinding is a great thing to work on, because one, it's fun, and two, on a windy day, you could be 60 and still be competitive.
Yeah.
There's quite a few women out here that are exactly that. I mean, if it's windy, you have to worry about it no matter what your age is. And so that was sort of how I got the idea. And then I kind of thought about it, because I had had some bouts with overtraining, that maybe I'd be able to get more volume in if I were sitting down, because the stress and strain on the peripheral body systems aren't quite as high. And actually that was true. This is the first winter since I can't remember when where I stayed healthy the entire time. So,
And do you attribute that sort of maintaining that health to mixing up your training across these different crafts?
Yeah, I really do think so. And it was so nice because usually like I, you know, swim, bike, run to try to work on that. And you know, those tools are all amazing for fitness, but they don't necessarily teach you more about the ocean or about feeling a paddle stroke or understanding the way you're moving through the water better.
Yeah.
Whereas the, you know, hopping on the water, other than just being wonderful and meditative, also teaches you all those things. I remember starting to even understand better the swim. Like last year I had a triathlon coaching clinic, and swim's pretty much my weakest coaching subject. But because I had had such great coaching in the six man, I could pretty thoroughly explain the stroke rate debate in swimming just by knowing paddling. And so, yeah, there's a ton of carryover, and also, I mean, the like surf ski and kayak is so great for your paddling muscles. It really does help.
So you said you've done the channel crossing multiple times or attempted it, and you just weren't really happy with some of your results. Last fall, then you're thinking, I want to maintain health. I'm going to try some different craft to learn the water better. And so you then said, okay, well, I'm going to next year, which is now 2018, I'm going to go off and I'm going to cross the channel three different times. And you put yourself to it. And so, if you back up then,
I didn't think it was possible, honestly, but really? I was like, oh, I'd like to try. Yeah. I was like, that was my, you know, that, I don't know. I set goals every year and that was my, like, I doubt it'll happen, but wouldn't it be awesome if it did?
Yeah.
It's
super amazing. I mean, it was like daunting and scary just to try to do a paddleboard race across. I can't imagine. And then after that, after I'd done it, I said, I didn't want to see my paddleboard for like 5 years. And then here you are doing it once and then getting on another craft, doing it twice and then getting on a third. So tell me this then, before you decided to put your mind to this, were you already well versed on the three craft, the SUP, the OC1, and surf ski? Were you kind of had those dialed in, or were you learning on some of those as you were preparing for 2018 to do this thing?
Yeah, I'm a little crazy like that. I was completely unprepared in one man and ski.
Really?
I had actually paddled a one man maybe 3 or 4 times.
Oh my goodness.
And was like, yeah, I'm going for it. I'm sort of one of those people, like, I love that ignorance is bliss, because I'll just be like, I'm gonna go for this, and everybody's like, no, you're not. And I'll be like, no, I'll figure it out on the way, it's all right. But the really daunting one is ski, because ski, there's very little actual crossover and it takes a while to learn the technique.
Wow.
And the balance is a total issue. Of course I have this, like, you know, sup mentality, like if I can sup on a 21 inch wide board, I'm sure ski won't be hard. And of course you're sitting in a ski out in the middle of the ocean. You know, I bought a super tippy one because I was like, oh no, I'll be fine.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, oh man, like the lifeguards might have to come rescue me today. If I'm lucky, because I can't get back in this thing. So it was really humbling. I actually had a number of people that are even friends, they're like, yeah, that's not gonna happen. And I was like, well, thank you for your opinion, but no, I'm just gonna keep on plugging away. If it doesn't happen, fine, but it's not going to be for lack of trying.
Yeah, I can tell that. So your core kind of discipline before was SUP, and then you're like, hey, I've done these other, those C1 and surf ski a couple times, but you got to get good. And so what was your game plan then? I mean, you're basically telling yourself, look, I got X number of months, so to speak. I mean, did you have races and or events or just a day and a time targeted for when you were going to attempt each of these crossings?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
And yeah. So I like hit up one of my friends who has One Man for Rent and basically gave him a chunk of money for a number of rentals, and then signed up for a handful of the winter series races. The fall ones are really good because they're less competitive for one man, but there's a lot of people out there and they have really good safety crews, which I thought would be important because I honestly like wasn't even sure if I should go out by myself.
Yeah.
It's sort of always been my strategy. I was like, I'll sign up for a race because at least there's safety crews out there. Yeah, so I signed up for a couple of races, and actually the one man came pretty easily to me. I wouldn't say I'm good at it, but I have a paddle stroke from six-man canoe and stuff that is pretty powerful. So I would like pass people who've been doing it a really long time, and then I'd like flip. And they'd all pass me. I'd catch up and like flip again.
Yeah.
And they were really happy I kept flipping over. But
so was that the biggest learning curve? Your stroke was there because you've been doing the six man. It was just like the singular balance. Was that the biggest learning curve on the canoe?
That and picking which downwind, which bumps to ride, understanding how the craft moves through water, understanding how to sit on it so your back doesn't cramp up. And then it's a huge challenge because unfortunately, or fortunately, I have all my teammates and, really good paddlers from other teams out there racing too. So it's kind of like where you finish in one man is sort of what the coaches are looking at for six man crews.
Hmm.
And so you don't want to be bad at it. There's kind of some pressure there and you're sort of fighting against some of your teammates and stuff. So I think that was really mentally challenging because I'd get to the start line and really want to compete and have like zero experience in it and not be able to fly the AMA and not fully understanding how to move the craft through the water and in bumps, kind of just learning on the fly and not having that much opportunity to do it. But then a friend of mine asked me to store his really old one man at my house and said I could use it to train on at least flat water. The rudder is kind of questionable, so I didn't want to take it out to the ocean, but so I started training on that in the Alawai, and then I had a couple friends who had identical boats to the one that I was probably going to be able to rent in the channel. And so I trained my long days on their boats, but I really couldn't take their boats downwinding because they're, $5,000 boats.
Yeah, yeah, definitely be careful with those guys.
Yeah, so you're asking your friends if you can borrow their $5,000 baby. And I didn't really want to ask them if I could strap it onto my car and take it, for a Hawaii Kai run. I kind of had to pick flatter days and paddle it out from the club, which was kind of anxiety provoking because it's been a really windy year.
Yeah, right.
With some surf. So everybody had been just downwinding on these nuking runs. The Maui to Molokai race that everybody did to prepare for Molokai that I did not do was nuking so much that really experienced paddlers were worried.
Right.
And I'm sitting here thinking like, oh man, I am going into this so unprepared because if you know one man downwinding, when it's that big, the rudder comes out of the water and it's kind of hard to
really
work with. Yeah.
Wow.
And so when the rudder comes out of the water, I'm not so good. And then everybody passes me and everyone who's doing that one man Molokai is pretty strong. So I was definitely a little bit freaked out about that.
Yeah. Definitely sounds like it did. So then staying with canoe, then when did you do that crossing, which is one of the three for you this year? What was the event?
So I did it at the beginning of May.
Got it.
So that event was May 5th, I believe.
Was that your first crossing of these three for the year, or did you do the ski before?
No, that was the first crossing, and then the ski was 3 weeks later, which was a really tight turnaround.
Got it. Okay, so you do the canoe, you're stoked, you finished it, so you're like, okay, are you thinking to yourself, okay, one out of three, you have like your little tick marks, or is one down, I got two to go. So were you like pretty amped after that?
I was really happy I finished, because there were some pretty big challenges in that crossing. Not necessarily with conditions. Conditions were tricky, but they were pretty tame by channel. You know, channel conditions can be. It was a little bit of north wind, funky little currents from the Big Island erupting, and just a little strange, but not too big or wild.
Yep.
So the week that I did the OC1 crossing, I had to get my heavy mileage in for the ski crossing.
Oh, my goodness.
So I got done with the one man and had to put in like, I don't know how many more hours on the ski before my taper, because, and even a 2 week taper is a little risky, but you wouldn't want to do all that mileage the week before the one man race.
Oh, wow.
So it was like an 80 mile week, and then I teach surfing. So some of that mileage was prone on my, you know, shortboard, surfboard too.
That's
so it was
gnarly.
That was a doozy. That was a little bit of a mental.
So you finished the one man race and you're stoked, but then, I mean, at some point, probably really quickly, the euphoria of finishing fades and you switch into this mode of, oh great, now I have to do this taper and I have to pile all these miles up in the next week, and probably all you want to do is chill and eat hamburgers and milkshakes for the next, you know, 3 days, but you can't. So that's a tough thing. Bit. Yeah. So take us through that. So you just kept amping and you stayed focused, and then you got your miles in, and then, so take us now to the surf ski event.
Yeah. So the surf ski went much smoother than the one man. The one man, there were some problems that arose logistically. We can talk about that later, but the one man, I was really, really worried about big channel because surf ski, I hadn't had a boat that I could downwind in any amount of water that was at all serious. So the surf ski I had bought is a very good ski, but it's super tippy. And much of my training I had done with a coach here locally who coaches the U.S. national kayak team. And so I borrow a super stable boat from him and do technique work and intervals in the Alawai, which is super flat. And then the other work I would do would be like taking my super tippy one out and trying not to die outside of Waikiki.
Yeah.
Or get rescued. because it was so sketchy just getting back in. The balance factor was a little spooky. And in those things, if you come out and can't get back in, and you have to get rescued. There is no way unless you ditch the boat and swim in.
Right. So
that's it.
So you're saying you couldn't get back in because you were so tippy. I'm sorry. Yeah. You were so tippy through like waves and surf that it was almost very, very challenging for you to get back in. Is that what you're referring to?
Oh yeah. They're round bottom and like 16 inches wide. There was one paddle where I like get on one side and fall off the other.
Oh.
Especially with that much mileage, because you're just toast.
Wow, you're so tired.
I had one paddle that I was going to go, it was my last long paddle, and I was going to go back and forth in Waikiki, and it was kind of blowing sort of south, southwest winds that day. And I made it to the channel at the Alawai. And I was like, I'm going to have to call my boyfriend to pick me up in the Alawai. I'm going to have to do the rest of my workout.
Oh, man.
I won't be able to get. Yeah. And he was very sweet and picked me up and brought me food and whatever. But yeah. So then you're thinking, okay, I've done all the training. Now what boat do I pick? And I didn't have many options because I couldn't go in my boat. Too tippy. There were like two boats at Two Good Kayaks all the Epic rep, who is my coach, wanted to give me a boat, but they were all rented out like a year ago.
Oh, wow.
And so I picked up the 10S from Too Good, but it was a really old 10S. And all of a sudden the wind forecast starts getting windier and windier and windier.
Oh, man.
I remember like eating lunch at Outrigger and seeing Oscar Chalupski come in, and he's like, well, it may be flat, but probably not. And he's like, you better just practice bracing and remounts all week for like now until Molokai. And that's exactly what I did. Like I went out in front of the club. I didn't even dare take my ski into the channel. I just like, I'd make loops and then do as many remounts as I possibly could.
Right. And so, for folks who might not know, a remount is what you basically simulate that you've fallen off your boat or tipped and jumping back on.
Right. From Got both it. Sides.
Yeah. Right. And which is physically taxing, right? Because A, it's mentally taxing because you're like, okay, my momentum stopped. Flip your boat over if it didn't already right. But then like just that exertion of like pulling your body up and slithering onto your boat and then doing that repetitively, it's physically taxing, but B, it's mentally taxing as well. So you really wanted to kind of get geared to face that in the actual channel.
Yeah. And it was not only that, but completely embarrassing because you've got all these amazing ski paddlers from South Africa, Australia, New Zealand, and they're all based at Outrigger. And so they're all coming in and out and, you know, you're the kook in the corner. Like, I'm just going to practice not dying. You guys all do your training paddles.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
and also a lot of people I know as well who are good paddlers, just like, oh, there's Jen.
Yep. There's splashing going on. There's a boat upside down.
Oh, yeah, man. Yeah. Totally.
That's classic.
And yeah, I may or may not be really good friends with a lifeguard over there who was probably laughing his tail off too. Yeah. So
yeah,
good fun.
So take us then to the day.
It got windier and windier and windier.
Leading up to the event, it started to blow.
Yeah, big time. Like, and even worse, I've been out in the channel and it's like that. So I knew.
You knew what to expect.
I was waking up in the middle of the night, myself and another athlete who was also trying to do this. We were having the same anxiety issues, and it made me feel better because she's an incredibly tough as nails athlete. Like,
yeah,
you could put that girl in a dumpster the night before a race and she'd wake up like refreshed, ready to beat everyone by a mile. and so I was like, oh, I'm so glad we're doing this together because you're an incredible athlete, and I'm not the only one waking up in the middle of the night checking the wind forecast obsessively.
And so you're saying
out about this.
Yeah. So you're saying this is like the night before the event. Even then you're still waking up worried about the wind.
Not just the night before the event. I'm talking weeks.
Like, I got it. Okay. Got it.
Yeah. 12 days out to the event started actually. And I've been an athlete a long time in multiple sports, so I don't really get that even night before pre-race anxiety.
Right.
So I'm not really used to it.
Yep.
And I was having major, like, what if I get out there and I can't stay in the boat kind of situation going on.
Got it. So how did it go?
Take
us through the event, if you would.
Well, I finally hit up a friend with a more stable boat. Yeah.
I hit up
a friend with a more stable boat. And borrowed it. Thankfully, he let me because I couldn't get another one of that type on the island. And so I padded it up, prepared it, practiced some more, sent it over. Morning of the event, actually, the surf was pretty big. So that's an interesting conundrum. Hmm. Luckily, I kind of prepared for it. I didn't pack anything and told my helper she was on her own for swimming with out.
Oh man. So you're saying the surf at Kulikoi Beach, is that where you guys staged like M2O?
Yeah.
And the surf
was
pumping.
Yeah, exactly. So you got to launch. Yeah. It was actually probably almost as big as that year that it was really big at Kualakoi.
Wow.
Was it 2015 when there was a hurricane? Yeah, yeah, it was big and it was nasty. And actually, one woman missed time. Pummeled on her kayak. Like, it was nuts for her surf ski.
Yeah.
Yeah. But luckily, I timed it and I got out to the start and got in the channel and... Visually terrifying, actually, because I'm not used to sitting down.
Oh.
Actually, it was probably one of my smoothest races of all time.
Oh, that's cool.
In any craft. I mean, I was slower because I didn't have enough experience to paddle a fast ski and have that technique. Some of those girls in the kayak and surf ski world, like, they were K1 paddlers growing up for very strong kayaking country. They were downwinding as children, so it's just a really different scene. But it felt really good. I mean, kayaking in the channel is insane. You're flying.
Really?
You can ride everything.
Wow.
Oh, yeah. But it's spooky because your vantage point is so low. It's kind of like prone paddling, except prone, you're on your belly. So it's prone, you can't really see anything, but it's not that bad if you're a surfer.
Yeah.
Because you just,
you're used
you know,
to it.
It's like surfing. Ish.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to
sitting down is weird.
Yeah, I get you. But weren't you sitting down in the canoe as well when you did that one?
Yeah, but you're higher up in a one.
Oh, you are. Okay. Got it.
It's weird. It's like those few inches make all the difference. It's strange.
Gotcha. So you're on the your ski, you're lower to the water, it's a different perspective and you're flying. So then I guess maybe contrast the perspective, which is really interesting, which is, I'm really fascinated by. In fact, you've done the channel in three different craft. Contrast your perspective of that, of the channel, based on standing, based on sitting kind of tall, and then based on sitting so low. I mean, does the channel have three different faces to it based on sort of what craft you're on and how high you are, or is it still the same old channel and it's burly and it's gnarly? I mean, just talk about the difference in your perspective of it, having seen it from those different vantage points.
Yeah, it feels a lot safer and more manageable on an outrigger. Although, with that said, I had the option to switch to OC1 the week of the channel race, and probably would have won money because there weren't that many women entered.
Mm.
And the thought just made me want to jump off a cliff. I was like, no, if I have to do that paddle stroke across the channel again, I'm not doing it.
Really? It was hard.
Yeah. No, it was just like, not that it was hard. I just didn't want to do it the same way again.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
It needed that variety. Like, the doing it with a kayak stroke was appealing, but doing it with a straight up and down paddle stroke wasn't.
Right.
But the one man feels like the safest of the three because you are pretty stable. Surf ski, you can catch everything and it feels like you're pole vaulting yourself through runners.
Wow.
And you're flying and it's just epic. Although I did paddle right over a shark and it was way scarier on a kayak or a surf ski than on a sup.
Because you were so low.
I mean, if there was a chomp, the boat's destroyed and you'll sink. So that is frightening, but you feel safer. The kayak, because the tippiness factor, when the color of the water changed, so I was like, I wonder if there's something under me.
Really?
And my boat later confirmed that. But I had to, like, tell myself, like, no, you just got to focus because I had waves coming at me from the side and you're tippy. Like, I'm going to fall in.
Yeah. Let's not fall for the next 5 minutes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Gosh.
And then sup. I love sup because you're surfing.
Yeah.
I did not love sup this year. Sup this
right.
year.
It was a different
that
story.
That channel crossing was it was the worst. Even a paddler who had done it 1 year in a race outside of the M2O series of races, who had done by far the gnarliest channel that I had known anybody on SUP had ever done.
Yeah.
He was like, no, this one was worse.
No way.
Because it, Yeah, it was because on a sup, and, you know, there are some people that were like, oh, we should have just all been on more stable boards. I don't really think that would have made much of a difference.
Mm-hmm.
Just because you're, with that extra width and flat bottom of friction,
yeah,
you couldn't quite get onto the bump because you've got 17 feet of sort of flat bottom or even concave for some people, that suction that you have to push onto the bump. I think that's why you had your shorter, stronger athletes won this year.
Yeah.
Like Travis and Tareen, they're both amazingly strong, not super long levers, and they can read the water great, but they have a lot of power body wise.
Interesting.
And leg strength. I mean, I wish I could be a fly on the wall with their strength training program. They probably push a lot of weight in the weight room. But for not being really able to have that much, that was probably worst case scenario for me, because you're further from the water, so you do have to pull harder. And then you got to stay on your feet. But if you don't catch that bump, you know, like any craft, speed is stability. So if you don't catch that bump and then you have all that suction because it was sucking, aren't running north.
Yeah.
That it was white tapping more than I've ever seen, ever having been out on the water.
Right.
So you'd like not catch the bump and then get smacked in the side of the board with a white cap.
Oh yeah.
I had like times where I would like touch my toes and spin.
Oh man. Yeah.
And my boat helper for all three crossings was like, oh my gosh, we're in serious trouble here. And I was like, no, because watch all the other boats. They're not moving either.
Yeah, that's right.
Everybody's having the same problem. Yeah. You guys just have to stop freaking out and let me work through this. but it
was challenging.
Time, that wasn't a great scenario for me.
Yeah no, that's cool.
The 2 weeks prior, I did better, but
yeah, well, I've talked to you.
Finishing it was very hard.
No, I mean, that's so awesome you did. And I've spoke to, I don't know, four or five different athletes from M2O this year. And I've done it twice in the last maybe 8 years. And I felt sorry for myself until this year, listening to all the stories of everybody. So I get that. But one really neat thing about when I speak here in the podcast with folks like you who are, you know, are I label as endurance athletes among many other types of athlete, is that the mental wall that some of us, maybe most of us, hit when the going gets tough, when you're tired, when you're falling, when that white water hits your board and throws you off and you can't see it coming, or you tip off your ski and you got to get back on, sort of that, the mental challenge part. So for you, just in general, you have a great training regimen. I've checked out some of your stuff on Instagram, and you have that part down. What about the mental aspect of this, of that kind of going in that dark place, or keeping your mind from going in that dark place when you're, I don't know, at mile 20 and you just wish you're back on the beach and never picked up the sport of SEP or something. Talk about that.
For me, it's faith in God. I hope it's okay that I say that here.
Please,
but
of course.
I believed that I got, that I had help out there.
Cool.
And every time it gets tough, for some reason, I always see an animal. And
really?
I'm like, okay, I'm not alone here. It's just, yeah. And then.
That's cool.
Yeah, so that's a huge, huge factor. I told my helper, people might think I'm crazy, but I was like, God just kept sending me birds.
Yeah.
Because I rescue birds. Birds make me happy. And so that really helped. The sub crossing, I had a really tough mental wall, just because falling is frustrating. And I love dugout boards. Like, I love dugout boards.
Yeah.
But getting back in those after time is challenging. I actually hit my knee on the rudder really early on in the race, so my knees both were swelling.
I
planted my paddle and somehow slipped and just knee planted right on the metal rudder piece, and our rudders are made for really tough paddlers, so they're kind of, it wasn't such a good soft landing. It was a big metal piece right in my kneecap.
Wow.
And that affected my balance. And so just like knowing that I couldn't quit and having to just deal with the frustration of getting back on. But I use music a lot too.
Yeah. Yeah. Same here.
I put really positive music on my whatever. And, I just actually, the hard part for me was my escort boat was freaking out. And I was like, you guys are going to have to calm down and shut up.
Yeah. They're supposed to be taking care of you. And then here you are taking care of them, getting them in the right place of frame of mind.
And my driver's been with me for years and years, who's done my sub crossings. And he's like, Jen just shushed me. He'd never be quiet because he knows I never would. I love that guy. And so they were taking care of me too, but it was just like we have to settle down and you guys are just going to have to watch me go through this and it's going to suck.
Yeah.
And we're just, I don't want to be here right now. I think there was that feeling. A lot of times I like to be out in the channel, but that particular time I was like, it just keeps getting worse and worse and worse, and I can't fix it. It was like being in, like getting a root canal at one point.
you were just looking for the next bird to cross your path to just get you another 20 minutes and then hope to see another bird. You were just focusing on your signs from above.
I was so happy when we got to the flatter water at Port Lock. I didn't even care about the headwind. I was just I paddled up next to Army Armstrong on the foil, who is not up on the foil. The board was in the water, just okay, we're here. We got this.
Got it. Yeah. And that's and a good finish. Feeling.
But
that's a good feeling. Rounding the point, knowing that you're there, you know, it's like, so feels so good.
It's funny. People hate that stretch of water. I love that stretch.
Yeah, I know.
The strangest thing. I love going upwind.
Yeah.
I'm weird.
So finish the race and you're so stoked, but you've also, it's like a 2-for-1 for you. Not only did you finish the gnarliest crossing that you've done, or probably for most folks, that was also your third. You did it. You did all three craft. And so when you got to the finish line, I mean, did you also feel sort of, you know, the excitement that you hit, you did it, you did all three? And were other folks like aware of this feat that you were attempting to do by finishing M2O on the SUP?
Yeah.
You were also going to do all three. So what was that like?
So it was pretty anticlimactic because nobody knew. I kept it completely under wraps because I didn't want, if I didn't do it. And the first crossing made me super, the first crossing, I had a hole in my boat. We barely made it to Molokai. The airline that I had booked on basically canceled all their flights that day.
Oh, geez.
And we got the last two seats on Mokulele. My boat helper was like, they're not flying out today. They may say they are, but they're not, because she used to fly a lot for work. And so she's basically like a female MacGyver.
Yeah.
And she's like, no, Jen, we're going here. And funny enough, when I was little, I almost crashed in the type of plane that Mokulele flies.
Oh, wow.
And so I have avoided my entire life hopping on that particular type of plane ever again. And I'm like, great, I hate you right now. Like, we're going over. But funny enough, one of our six-man teammates happened to be on that flight going over there to hunt. And he's pretty much like has been through the hardest survival training anybody could ever go through.
Yeah.
I'm not probably allowed to say what branch or what type of guy he is, but straight up gnarly. So I was like, if we're going down, like,
That's
my helper used to be gnarly law enforcement and he was super gnarly military. I was like, we're good. <I'm fine."> And we got there and actually had a few more things go really wrong. And by the time I hit the start, there was a hole in my boat. I didn't actually have any tools to fix it.
Oh, wow.
So I borrowed a guy's like sweaty handkerchief that was just a tourist. I asked for his t-shirt, but he wasn't having it. He's like, here, I've been wiping my face with this. It'll be perfect. And I had a piece of duct tape, which is not really effective in fixing holes in boats.
Right.
And so I was like, I paddled super hard because I thought the boat was going to sink and it was going to be all over then. So I got super like, I didn't want anybody to know. I had a handful of people around me that knew that I was what I was doing, and that was it.
Yep.
So when I got to the finish line, I actually had a huge airway spasm.
Oh,
so I couldn't breathe.
Whoa.
And I was like, I did it, and nobody knew what I did. They're like, okay, Jen.
Oh, man. An airway spasm. I don't think I've ever heard of that. What is that?
Yeah.
What happened?
I don't know. I've had some, I overtrained in 2012 just by not knowing how to train and trying to do something really gnarly and stupid, and have had probably like pneumonia every other year since.
Oh, wow.
And I basically dialed it in. It was a nutrition deficiency that I hadn't even thought of, magnesium.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, my Garmin helped me figure that out because I was seeing like some heart rate changes. And I was like, what is that all about? And
that's cool.
Lo and behold, magnesium, which is awesome. I've been healthy, but asthma has been an issue. I always had it, but ever since I had bouts of pneumonia, it's a little more of an issue. And if I go really, really hard in a race, it'll happen. But it was kind of a bad one, and I just know to relax and breathe through it. It's okay, but it's really scary for family members watching.
Wow.
Like,
no
dying.
Kidding. Wow. So since...
And, yeah, so it's funny.
Oh, man, I'm glad you're okay from that. So since you finished it, then, you know, take us forward out. You know, that was, end of July. So we're here, we are early September. It's about 6 weeks or so. So since then, I'm sure word's gotten out that Jen... Lee's done this thing. And so in the community, the water community where you're at, even beyond, I mean, are you getting a lot of props? Is it a pretty, I mean, are you feeling the vibe and people are so stoked that you pulled that off?
It's so interesting. Somewhat. There was some, like a little bit of press. I think there will be a magazine article about it at some point, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Just because it was such a challenging thing. And also, just really cool to be able to be out there that many times. And you know, the drama of doing one Molokai race, doing that
three
times. And then actually we've got a fourth coming up here in a week, the six man crossing.
Whoa.
Believe it or not, that is just as stressful and as exciting as all the other ones.
Yeah.
Even though you have your teammates with you, it's almost more pressure because they're all depending on you. And yeah, you're paddling really, really hard because you've got 15-minute intervals, and everybody on my team at least wants it so bad.
Yeah.
We just started our paper.
Rad.
We had our last race prep. Yeah. I haven't been chilling at all. Actually, the tricky part is negotiating the team environment, having done that, but also like my position on the team is actually a newer paddler.
Mm.
And yet I've missed a lot of practices, but I'm a strong paddler, and my poor coaches are like, where do we put you? Because, you know, there were certainly days where I had to recover. I couldn't paddle. So
yeah.
I'd be like, you know, I'd paddle for an hour and be like, take me out of the boat, please, so I don't die. And like, my coach, who's lovely, she's so awesome. She's just rolling her eyes. She's like, Jen, we can't let you be the princess. So definitely there's been some interesting, like, negotiating that and being really stoked about what, you know, my team and I, not my paddling team, but the people around me, my coach, my helper, my sponsors, what we accomplished, because it is truly Mission Impossible. But also being like, nope, I can't be special right now. I need to be on a team and do my best. And, you know, I'm not sure which crew I'm going to get to paddle with.
Yeah.
Definitely not first, because I missed so many days of training, but I'm so torn because I have two really neat crews that I could end up with, and I love both equally for different things. So we'll see. It's going to be really interesting.
Yeah, rad.
But definitely the heat is on.
Good. Well, I think it's been on for you all year, and you're crushing it. And I admire you, your strength and stamina, and just your positive attitude and all of that. I mean, it's amazing, amazing. Anybody who knows that water and has done that crossing, it's amazing. So I huge props to you. Okay. Yeah. Tell us about the chicken, please.
So I'm a sucker for any kind of animal. For some reason in the last, I don't know how many years or so, we bought a pet bird at the store, and then, a family friend found one in need of help, and we sort of got suckered into, being bird parents. For some reason I'll walk by somewhere and they'll just be like falling out of the trees, and I'm like, dude. In his bowl. And with Daffy, what had happened was, I absolutely love them, even though they are a lot of work. But Daffy, he was up at KCC, and he was maybe a day old, like he had really just hatched. And he was trying to keep up with his family, but his feet were pretty mangled. I don't know whether the way he had best or the way he was in the egg. So I picked him up. Well, first I tried to like get him to walk and go with his family. But birds are pretty, you know, anything in the animal kingdom, if the little one isn't going to survive.
Yeah, he's out.
They kind of just leave him behind. And yeah, so I brought him home. My better half was like, what are we going to do with the chicken? And he's like, well, maybe it'll be a hen and she'll lay eggs. And I was like, cool, I'm going to hold on to that thought. And we made little foot splints for him.
Oh, wow.
My boyfriend was really cute. And he actually, like, made a wood splint, but that didn't work. But athletic tape worked pretty well and kind of straightened it out to the point where he can walk. But he couldn't be, like, an outdoor chicken. Because he just needs more padding.
Right.
And so, you know, as we're finding out that he's a rooster, you know, he's growing exponentially at that time. And, you know, I'm such a sucker. I'm like, there's no way. We've gotten this far. Like, we'll figure it out. And my boyfriend was a little more skeptical. Because they go through this phase if they're birds that were outdoor birds that need to learn how to be indoor birds, there's a stage where you have to let them just be birds.
Right.
And that means, you know, actually none of ours have their wings trimmed, but they have to be able to fly. They have to be able to walk around and kind of have space to learn how to be a bird. And you kind of help them, but their instincts are sort of attuned to that. Eating, not so much, but flying and stuff, they're pretty good. And so I gave him the bathroom, and I tell you, that bathroom, I was like, yeah, I don't know if this is gonna work either.
Yeah.
He was pretty messy. And then all of a sudden, he must have known, because he potty trained himself.
That's crazy.
So he only goes in one place. We have a big, huge dog crate that he can go when we're, you know, not home, or when he just wants to chill.
Yeah.
It's there. But yeah. That's the only place he goes. And he goes one spot in the newspaper, and we just roll it up and throw it out.
Wow. That's cool.
We boarded up we like made the room so nothing, you know, light really doesn't come in the mornings. We got blackout curtains.
Yeah.
And kind of, I did a lot of research on soundproofing a room because my landlord lives on property, and she's like, as long as no one complains, you can keep him.
Yeah.
Awesome. And actually he makes less noise than their dogs. So that's really nice. But I had to like do a lot of Googling and contacting like music, you know, sound people to be like, what's the best way to acoustically fix the room? And then also doing research on how to make sure he's not aggressive, and how to sort of train a chicken. And so it's all worked out, and he's adorable. He thinks he's a dog. You just can't, we can't let him around the kitties because he thinks they're his hens.
Oh, no way.
And they think he's dinner.
Yeah. So, it doesn't work out too well. Yeah. Oh, that's a good one.
Yeah, he likes to sit and, like, watch TV, and he'll go in the car. He likes going to Starbucks. He's really cute. No surfing in his future. I'm not that adventurous.
That's what I was going to ask you. Has he been out on the canoe with you yet?
Yeah, no. I've actually taken care of birdies that have drowned, so I'm super careful about that. I know they can swim, and he likes being, you know, like, walked around outside, but I wouldn't take that chance just because he doesn't have chicken instincts.
Yes, that's right.
He thinks he's a dog. But I have had friends who've taken their chickens surfing and their ducks surfing. There's a beach boy in Waikiki that actually trained all of his ducks to surf, and they'd take him out on their lunch break.
Ah, cool.
So they can do it. Yeah, it's pretty cool. But yeah. Anyway.
Right on.
That's Daffy's story. And he is a very happy boy. He's extremely spoiled. And he has other birdie friends, so he thinks he's king of the flock, and that works really well. If he was by himself indoors, I don't think it would work.
Oh, Jen, well, you got your hands full, I'll tell you. So a lot of rad stuff you're doing, and thank you so much for sharing that, and tell Daffy hi for me. But again,
I will all send photos.
Yeah, and best of luck.
Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, for sure. I appreciate your time and sharing.
So much.
Yeah, thank you. And it's been great. And good luck in the sixth man coming up soon. And just we'll get this out. And thank you, and really appreciate sharing so much with us today.
Oh, thank you for allowing me to share. It's been an honor.
Great. Okay. Thank you. Hey there. Thanks so much for listening to the podcast today. We really appreciate all the support. If you like what you heard, please, you know, hype us up on social media. Always appreciate, you know, spreading the word. Give us a nice little rating on the your podcast app, and just keep tuning in. If you're interested in being on the show and sharing some of your life stories, hit me up, josh@thisoceanlife.tv. You can PM me on Facebook or Instagram. Anyway, thanks again for being here, and have a great day.